Welcome to the Profitable Trading Podcast. Tony, your host here with Phil Smith, the other host.
G'day, mate.
You looking good this morning, buddy?
Yeah, shaved the head a bit further down than I meant to, and now we're both shining.
That's right, you're a little bit aggressive. Actually, one of my kids said your head's really shiny this morning, Dad.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, I think that's something, a compliment that you should have thanked him for.
Yeah, a little snot anyway. What are we into today, man? This is going
to
be good.
Well, we're talking about like different types of jobs that you should say no to. And honestly, sometimes you're just flat out busy, but the bank account doesn't reflect it. You know, clients might be dictating how your business runs. Your day constantly gets blown apart. And you're saying yes to jobs that you know you shouldn't take, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing here is most business owners don't struggle for a lack of work. It's often the type of work that's actually killing them. And they don't even realize. And it feels good to be busy. And, you know, the revenue's coming in. But it has to be profitable, and that's the key. And there's just some types of work, four in particular, that are actually going to kill your business. You need to stop doing them.
And I think, yeah, that reminds me of that Warren Buffett yarn you were telling me about.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. So obviously smart guy. Now, if you're younger than me, probably maybe younger than you, I'm not sure. You remember the punch card. You know, if you clock in and you put a card in this machine, it'll punch the time. In the card, and then
you punch
out.
I wasn't around in the Stone Age, but like we had a fingerprint scanner, which was kind of similar. Well, I guess it was just kind of the updated version,
probably because you're in lockup, mate. Like maximum security for you, buddy. Anyway, Warren Buffett had some advice on investing. He said, you know, imagine you have a punch card and it only's got 20 slots in it. So that's all the investments you can make in your entire life. So every decision you make, you punch that card, and once it's full, that's it. So you've got a really limited opportunity. And I think when that happens, you get really selective about the actions you're going to take. You think hard. You say no to a lot more things, and you're really careful about saying yes to the right things. And this is the problem with jobs. Often there's just jobs there, and we just do them. We don't really even think about it. We just say yes. You know, it's good service. Any job's a good job. It's all going to pay us some money. But the trouble is our portfolio, our work portfolio, if you like, is full of average or poor work. And you can only spend that time once, and you can only spend your tradesperson and your techs time once. So if you're filling it with the wrong jobs, there's no room left for the right ones and the ones that are actually profitable, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, 100%. And if we don't get this right, we do run into a lot of problems, right?
There is. I mean, you can be busy, but you're not profitable. Your schedule's chaotic with work that's not making your money. You're very reactive. Your team gets frustrated because it's disorganized. You get more of the same low-quality work. You're sort of fishing in the same bad pond. And your business really can't grow. It's super difficult. You know, you don't necessarily have a workflow issue. You've actually got a job selection problem.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Now, I think like if you do have a job selection problem, you know, big issues. But on the other hand, if we can flip this and look at it a different way, you know, there's big opportunity on the other side.
I think there is. Like if you choose the right work, you're going to get higher margins. You're going to make more money by working the same or less hours, which is a good thing. You've got better control. That's right. Better time your schedule and your time. Smoother jobs, happier team, better clients, and you'll actually be able to grow a business. And this is the key thing. You know, businesses struggle when they don't have good margins. They can't grow. And so if you want to grow, those margins have to be strong. And choosing the right type of jobs is a key part of that. And choosing the right type is actually saying no to the wrong type.
Where do we start with all this, mate? Because I think like people are probably on tender hooks. They're like, tell me more.
There's four types of jobs. And the first one, which we see a lot, is where the clients supply the materials or, you know, labor-only work, where you're effectively hiring your labor and that's all you're getting paid for. So that's definitely one to look out for.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, reality is like if you're selling your time but you're not actually selling any materials with it, then that's just lost margin. I mean, because you're not making the margin on those materials. And yeah, unfortunately, this comes up quite a lot, right? You know, you get customers that'll come to you about, hey, what if I bought the unit myself? Or, hey, I want you to install a toilet, but don't worry, I've already got the toilet, or things like that. Or you might be subcontracting yourself to maybe more of a sales company. For example, maybe you install solar for someone that actually sells solar. They sell the batteries, they sell the inverters, the panels, but you just install them. All of that kind of stuff. And the hard part is that you don't get the margin on whatever you couldn't sell. Next thing is that, you know, you have no control over the quality. So they might have bought really low quality materials and now you're going to actually pay the price for the responsibility of the crap that they bought. Next thing, you know, you run into delays because things can go wrong. You know, maybe the materials don't come in time and you couldn't control that process. And so you can be delayed by that. And the thing is with all of these problems is you're going to carry the risk anyway for all of the things that the client might have got wrong, that the customer might have got wrong or not organized properly. And so you just carry a lot of risk for no reward, and it's not good. Yeah. I mean, it's not the way to roll.
Yeah, well, I mean, with materials, often the client won't understand what quality is.
Hmm.
And, you know, if they're worried about price, they'll probably buy cheap stuff. And that can break or damage really quickly. And who is the client going to call?
You.
You. They're going to say, well, this isn't working.
It's installed it wrong.
You installed it wrong. So that's a real problem. So you will carry the responsibility no matter what.
Well, the hard part is people don't want to kick their own butt, right? So the thing is like, if you're in a position where they've, you know, supplied the materials, you've installed them, you know, anything that goes wrong with their job, they're going to blame you, because the alternative is to blame themselves. And just a human nature thing is people don't want to do that. You know, even subconsciously, they don't want to do it. And so they won't even think that it might have been the, you know, budget materials that they bought. They'll just think that you've done a bad job. And so you're going to wear the responsibility either way.
It's starting to sound a lot like personal responsibility. Anyway, that's a whole different story. I really want to dig into the numbers, though.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, when you do labor-only work, actually the margins you make are actually often really good, because you might pay, you know, $40 an hour for your team, and you're charging out at $80 or $90 an hour. And so you've got actually quite a high margin if you calculate the
percentage-wise.
Percentage-wise. And, you know, if you're selling a piece of kit, the margin on that can often be lower, especially if it's bigger. But the thing is, and this is the key thing, it's how much gross profit you make per hour of your tradesperson or your technician's time.
Yep.
This is the key thing. And if you're selling materials, then you are making more per hour.
Yeah.
As simple as that. And so overall, even though your margin might be a little bit lower, the amount of money you make is a lot higher.
Yeah.
A lot higher.
Well, I mean, again, if we go back to the solar example, if we want some numbers here, I remember we had two different clients that both did solar. And one of them did install only. So they were subcontracting to a sales company which sold the job. Got the lead, sold the job. They supplied the panels, the inverters, you know, all of the batteries, everything. And our client came in and they did the installation. Now, this client was running at a 65% GP margin, which seemed really high, but it was labor only. Now, on the other hand, we had another client who actually, they sold all of their solar units themselves. So, you know, they sourced the leads, they made the sales, and they're clipping ticket on the batteries, the inverters, you know, the panels, everything, and doing the install. Now, they had a 31% GP, and so on paper, the install-only business is doing 65%. The people that are supplying all of the gear are doing 31%. You'd think 65% is better, but when we worked out the GP dollars per hour, the person doing the installs of their own gear was making something ridiculous like $100 an hour more profit. For every hour they were on a job, they made another $100 than the person doing 65%. And so I think the key is this can be quite deceiving as well, because you might be getting a really good percentage margin and think, wow, I'm doing great, you know, life is good. But actually, you're missing out on so much just by clipping ticket on those materials, because reality is they were adding large commodity items that were very expensive, clipping a smaller ticket on those items, because it's not like they're going to get 65% on, you know, batteries and stuff like that. But the reality is that was working out so much better, because they didn't build the batteries. They didn't build, you know, the panels. They weren't putting an inverter together. They were just, you know, chucking it in. And so for the amount of time they were on a job, they were clipping heaps of money for a small amount of time. And really, that's it. It's getting the most bang for buck from the time that you're on the job.
Yeah. So you definitely want to be very careful with labor-only work or clients supplying the materials as well, because there's lots of fish hooks and it's not as profitable as you think. You know, occasionally you might do it as a stopgap measure if you've got a real gap in your workflow, but that's another whole problem, which we want to talk about at the end of this episode as well.
Yeah, so, 100%, 100%. So should we go to number two?
Number two is call-outs that blow up your day. So that looks like you've got the day planned and you get a phone call, urgent job, repair job, something's broken down somewhere and you have to go and fix it. So you reshuffle the whole day, you rush out, and everything's in chaos. You know, it destroys your planning, you've got productivity problems because you're pulling people off jobs, all that sort of thing. It creates a lot of stress with the team. Often, and here's the big problem, often people underprice this work is probably the big problem here.
Hmm.
They don't actually charge appropriately for the fact that it does blow your day up. So that's the key thing. And you might have a small service charge or no service charge because you feel bad about it. But actually what's happening, it's destroying the profitability and the productivity of all your other jobs because of the disorganization, the mucking around, the rescheduling you've got to do, the five phone calls you've got to make to the next five clients whose jobs are pushed out by 3 hours or have to be done tomorrow or the next day. the office in chaos, and it's just, it's nuts.
Well, even worse, if you have techs on site, you know, at one job, and they've actually got to put tools down to go and, you know, pause and go to another job, even worse. And I think the reality is that, you know, people do this. And if we're honest, I think we all do it from time to time. Something feels urgent, but you've got to weigh up that urgent versus important thing. Because one thing as well is, like, you've got to remember, even if you're not putting tools down on a job, if you're finishing whatever you're on and then changing your schedule, going somewhere else, there's still a reshuffle of what I'm doing in my day, which happens to you, happens to your office team, happens to your, you know, field team, where they're pretty sure what they're doing for the day, and suddenly I've got to rush off and do something else. Suddenly my plan of I was going to go to this job, then this job, then this job, you know, and that was going to make sense in terms of a map and, you know, not wasting time. Suddenly I'm driving all the way across town and then I've got to go back, and there's so much wasted time. The thing is all of that disruption, there's a lot of tangible, easy ones, like maybe I've got to travel further, take longer, or reorganize, call people. But then there's the mental disruption as well, which is as bad. And it can really throw people, and there's a lot of lost productivity in that mental disruption. And I think we can all relate to that if you're listening. Like, when something unexpected pops up in your day, it can really throw you, and it takes you a while to get back in the zone and actually start doing stuff. And that happens to, you know, your entire team. And so it really is probably even more widespread than we think on face value as well. And I think that's something important.
Well, I often think about painting. Now, I'm not a painter, but I've done... Yeah, we work with lots of painters.
I've got painters at my house today,
yeah,
mate.
And I've done lots of painting, you know, and renovation work and developments and stuff. And the thing is, it takes you a while to get set up to actually get paint on the wall. You get paint on the rollers and the brush. You've got to get everything organized.
Oh, yeah, the prep's the worst part.
Yeah, and it's not even just the sanding. You might have even done that. You've, you know, got to mix the paint, muck around and pour it out and blah, blah, blah. And
drop sheets,
yeah, all that sort of stuff. And then at the end of the day, you've got to pack that down as well as, you know, to an extent. So you've got those two set up and put down periods, and that's what happens every time you shift the schedule. That's a lost productivity. So you've got to be very careful about this. Now, I'm not saying don't do this stuff, but I'm saying you've got to do it right. If you just do it on the fly, that's not going to work. What you need to do is plan for it. So if you are running that type of business, then you need scheduled, dedicated people who are available to do this.
Mm.
Next thing is, you absolutely must charge a premium for urgency. You know, there might be different levels to that. It might be, hey, if we're there within an hour, it's a tier one call out. If it's within 3 hours, it's a tier two. If it's in this day, it's a tier three call out. So that you can factor in the costs of doing this call out, but also the profit that you should make from it. This is absolutely critical.
And people will pay for urgency and speed. Like, it's really just that simple. If you've got a very urgent job and it needs to be done now, and it's going to cost a little bit more, or you can wait and pay a little bit less. The thing is, people will weigh that decision up, and a lot of people are going to choose to pay a bit more to have it done right now. I mean, and if they don't, well, you still don't lose. They're just like, oh, that's cool. You can come in, you know, a few hours' time, and I'll pay that lesser price. It's like, either way is fine. But if they want the urgency, they should pay for it. It's really very simple.
And this is the big thing. It's a great way of actually helping them understand what's urgent in their mind. By the pricing structure that you have, and if it is really urgent, they won't mind what it costs, because the benefit to them, you know, you think of a commercial or industrial facility that goes down and the line is stopped. They need someone there within an hour. They'll pay anything because it's worth it. I mean, it makes sense. But if it's just someone's house where the light's not working, well, they can probably wait a couple of days, not pay the call out.
Reminds me of a chat I was having with a guy on my footy team, actually. And you know, we were talking about, like, with the government and saying, you know, hey, look, when there's less fuel, we should put out these different stages and all that kind of thing. And hey, stage one is we should probably do, you know, conserve gas, you know, drive a little bit less, and, you know, people should be conscious of that. And he said it's ridiculous, because when gas is more expensive, people will naturally conserve gas anyway, based on whether or not they can afford it. And so you don't actually need to make that a government mandate, because it's controlled by the price. And so this is exactly the same thing. Reality is like, everyone thinks their job is urgent, like everybody. It doesn't matter how unurgent it is or how much you understand about it. Everyone wants their job done right now. And so that decision about how urgent it actually is in their mind is impossible for them to make until they see the difference between, you know, very urgent, moderately urgent, and somewhat urgent, and not urgent at all in terms of pricing. That will help them to self-select and you to actually better organize your schedule. Because otherwise everyone thinks they're urgent. How do you actually prioritize where to go first? Which is also a difficulty that you would have to figure out. Whereas when you have the pricing, you don't have to figure it out. The clients will self-select. Yeah. So it makes it easier.
The invisible hand of the free market. Anyway, we're getting into some different stuff there. Number three, this is important, is where you can't control the timeline. And it's a little bit similar to the urgent job, but it's a bit different. It's more for bigger jobs, you know, contracting jobs. And that's where builders or project managers or general contractors, they're delays, they rush jobs, they're waiting around you, they call you today to be there this afternoon or tomorrow, or they say you're going to be there tomorrow and they're like, hey, no, it's not going to be till next week. This stuff really destroys your margin. There's idle time mucking around, reorganization, and effectively you're paying for someone else's poor planning or lack of organization. This is a big, big problem.
Yeah.
It might look like multiple trips to jobs when there shouldn't be this many trips. And I can remember many clients we've worked with, one in particular, who was, you know, taking 20, 25 trips to build a simple house because the builder was very disorganized and they were letting this happen. So this is stuff we've got to knock on the head straight away. This will destroy your profitability. You can't do these jobs, or you've got to figure out how to do them in a more productive and profitable way.
Well, I think this can be a really hard one to attack as well, because sometimes, like, you know, we might be working with a client who gives us repeat work, and we might even get a lot of work from this client, and they can somewhat hold the position of, well, you know what, you've just got to work around me, this is what it is, and if you want to keep getting the work, you know, this is how I operate. And I think the hard thing is we want to be able to say no to this person. But on the other hand, another approach we can do is actually just set really clear up expectations up front. Man, talk to them about the fact that they're inefficient. The reality is their inefficiency is probably costing them money as well. And so you can just say, hey, mate, like, I've noticed a few things that could really help you get more organized, that it actually help you be more profitable as well. Like, would you want to talk about it? I've learned a couple of things about this. You might actually be able to genuinely help this person to get more organized as well.
You could suggest they like, follow, and share the Profitable Trading Podcast.
Yeah, it might help them.
Anyway.
Yeah, like, follow, and share, guys. Yeah. But I think the point is like, this doesn't have to be a confrontational conversation as well. It could actually be from a place of genuine care and like, hey, mate, noticed a few of your jobs are probably going a bit sideways just from a lack of organization. Like, hey, I've learned a few things along the way which might be quite helpful. Would you want to hear them? And honestly, they'll probably be pretty open to it. They're running a business just like you, and they probably have a lot of margin creep due to their own, you know, their own chaotic nature. So don't get pushed around by this. And again, it doesn't have to be like a, I'm never working with this person again. Like, you actually might be able to help them through this and they become a great client. So
yeah, it becomes a contractual thing as well. You talk about expectations and you build this into the agreements you have with people. So for example, you know, if you're building a house, you know, plumbing out a house or wiring it or something similar, it's like, hey, we've allowed this many trips to the field to do this job. Any more than that is a variation. And so you start working from that angle so they understand that actually we've planned this out. And if you're outside of scope, because disorganization causes massive scope creep and all that sort of stuff. So you actually lock that in. And you set up your communications early. You just check on progress with that client as well. Like, your project management needs to be really strong. So you don't rely on them to tell you what's happening. You're very proactive. You're calling them a week before, you know, a couple of days beforehand. Even if your site supervisor or your project managers have to go and visit that job out in the field a couple of days beforehand to see where it's at, you do that to take away the you know, the uncertainty. So you're really in the driving seat. So there's definitely stuff you can do.
I'd so much rather spend a little bit of my project manager's time today to go check than to send three guys to a job with all their stuff another day, you know, when they're planning to be on site all day, only to turn up and realize they can't do anything and have to leave and we've got nothing booked. Like, honestly, it's not a waste of time to send someone out early and do the recon.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, if you're listening, if you've been doing this for a while, what these situations are, and they're an absolute killer.
Yeah,
and often we just apologize and, oh, we'll figure it out later. But this will destroy the profitability of your business.
So I think one point to really make is a lot of the time the reason we won't go and check on a job is A, fear, because we don't want to piss the client off, or B, we say we don't have time. So I don't have time to go and check on that job. I don't have time. I'm like, well, do you have time to send, you know, all your guys to a job another day, the day they're supposed to be there, only to be turned around and have to go back and, you know, clear your schedule not just once but twice? You know, like, do you have time for that? Because if you have time for that, then sweet. But if you're saying you don't have time to go and check on it once, you definitely don't have time to screw 2 days up. So, I mean, it's your choice, really. And I think that's the key is the more organized you are, the more organized you can keep them. And yep. I think that's very important.
Yeah, and there's we'll get to number four in a minute. But there is something I want to talk about at the end of this, which is critical to all of this, which is what keeps you locked into this. And I think you're kind of alluding to that. But
yeah, we'll get there.
We'll save that to the end. Yeah. So number four, jobs that you take out of guilt or habit.
Ooh.
So I think we've all done this.
The G word.
Yeah, the old guilt word. It's like, yeah. It's, you know, old clients you've had for a long time, friends, mates rates. Is a comment we use in New Zealand. Favors, you know, we've always just worked with these people. Or family is another one.
Yeah.
And so here, emotional decisions really override logic. Low margins kind of become the norm. I know of someone recently who's doing who's got a family member doing it because he's given him a good deal. Anyway,
it's not about a good deal. I trust my brother, mate. He's going to do a great job. But actually, funny story, man. Like, so, you know,
you're looking a bit guilty there, brother.
If you've been listening, you probably know my dad's an electrician, and I remember when I bought my first house, I had an electrical job that I needed doing, and I called up my dad, and you know, I sheepishly said like, "Hey, I'm thinking of doing this myself." Hint, hint. You know, like, what's the best way to approach this? And he said, "You want me to do it, eh?" And I was like, "Well, you know, if you're free." And he said, "No." And I was like, "Excuse me? Like, what, is it just a flat no?" And he's like, "Nah, I don't work for family." And I was like, "I'm your son, bro. Like, come on, man. Like, it's not like a distant cousin." And he said, "That's actually even worse." He said, "The closer the family member, the more of a hard no it is. So it's just a flat no." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, if anything ever went wrong with this job, Phil, whether it was something you thought went wrong or something I thought went wrong, like, this is going to create a problem. I'm not willing to create a problem with my own son." So it's as simple as that. And he hung up. I was like, "Oh, bro." And at the time, honestly, I was a bit hurt. But like, I thought about it later and I was like, you know what? I would tell a client to do the same thing. So I think it is something important to keep in mind.
Yeah. I mean, the thing here is we just feel awkward about charging properly for this stuff sometimes. And we feel, and they have an expectation that we're going to give them a deal and stuff. But you can only spend this time once, and so there's a massive opportunity cost. And what it often looks like, I mean, the family and friends thing is kind of a one-off. You know, that's not the biggest thing. The biggest thing here is old clients you've worked with for a long time.
That's the real killer.
Who kind of have cheap rates, and you just keep doing it because, oh, man, they've been a good client. But if you actually stack them up against your other jobs, you're not making as much money from these guys, and it's costing you money. That's the problem.
And if this is really such a good relationship that you really don't want to damage, then why are you letting them damage you? Like, if they're really a friend, if they're really a mate, if they're really the type of client that you have a great relationship with, then they should also understand that you shouldn't be wrecking yourself for the sake of giving them a slightly better deal that, you know, honestly, they'd never be able to get anywhere else. It's not like you're going to go and stick them for everything they got. That's not the point. But the point is if you've undercharged your work based on some kind of loyalty over time, you're basically saying our relationship doesn't understand inflation, like let alone value, let alone anything else. And if you think I'm really that good and that's why you want me to do the job, you should be happy to pay my rates. You know, like, whereas if the only reason you want to use me is because I'm cheaper than everybody else, then you don't think I'm that good. You just think I'm cheap. And that's not a relationship. That's actually kind of extortion.
It's bordering on abuse. They should value...
Honestly, you say bordering and I say kind of. There's no bordering or kind of. It's extortion and abuse. That's what it is. Like, you're kind of like the beaten person who's just coming back for more. Like, it's not a good situation. It's not a real relationship.
Yeah, and the thing in business is your job is to make money. And if you feel a little bit awkward about that, that's another whole conversation. But you've got to make money. That's critical. And you should try and make as much money as you can with the jobs you're doing. Because
it's not even a should. It's you have to. Yeah. You have a responsibility to that. Like, especially if you have, you know, employees, you've got people in your team, you know, they have families. If you're unprofitable, like, you're risking their futures. You're risking your family's future. Like, you have an absolute responsibility and burden to be profitable. That's the whole point of having a business. So it's actually not a choice.
So start saying no to jobs that you're doing out of guilt and habit, because that's not helping.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the next point, because I know you've been fizzing for this.
This is important. So here's the thing. You probably have done some of these four types of jobs, and maybe you shouldn't, but you keep doing them. And here's why people keep doing this. They hold themselves in unprofitable jobs is because they feel like they don't have a choice. They feel like they have no power because they don't have enough leads. They have inconsistent workflow. They have cash flow pressure. They have a fear of saying no. So they say yes to whatever comes in just to keep things moving. And really what it is, it's a trap because your sales and marketing is not where it needs to be.
Yeah.
You're weak in this area. So you don't have choice. You can't get more work to replace the work that's not profitable. And so you just stick with the work you've got. And that's, you know, this always shows up when people are in this situation. They have a lack of effort and effectiveness in their sales and marketing, and therefore they feel they don't have power and they just put up with a bad situation. Yeah. So that's the key thing that we have to shift.
Yeah, and we'll tell ourselves all kind of other stories about loyalty or about, you know, hey, look, it was a great job, all these other stories. But the reality is you're not marketing and selling enough to have any choice. It really comes back to that every time. So I think, yeah, definitely. I know you've been waiting to say that, mate. So.
Well, the thing is, when you've got options, it's really easy to say no.
It is.
It's basic psychology. So the more options you have, the more powerful you can be about the choices you make. And if you want a great business, you got to say no to this stuff. To say no to it, you've got to have choice, which means you've got to have strong marketing and sales in the right area to get the jobs that are profitable.
100%. All right, let's land this plane.
All righty. Now, you don't need more work. You need better work. Because every time you say yes to the wrong job, you're actually filling your punch card with stuff that is holding your business back. Now, the best businesses out there, they win because of the work they say no to. Thanks heaps for listening. We'll catch you all again next time.
See you later.
Next week on the Profitable Tradie Podcast. On this episode, we're breaking down a simple 20-minute system that will not only stop team issues before they blow up, but also help you get the absolute best performance out of every person in your company. Now, when our members implement structured one-on-ones like this, not only do retention and culture improve, but productivity, accountability, and individual performance increase dramatically. Now, during this episode, you'll learn how to run the 20, what to cover in those conversations, the biggest mistake most business owners make when talking to their team, and how to use the 20 to uncover issues early and unlock better performance from your people. If your team's underperforming, it can cost you thousands of dollars every week, and the worst part is you probably don't even know where it's leaking. So tune in. Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of The Profitable Tradie Podcast.